All right, so we are in the land of Ozzy, right?
That's right.
The Wizard of Ozzy. Who are you?
Abilati Badagashi, architect for Cloud Services and the Live Mesh project.
Excellent, Live Mesh. So can you quickly refresh my memory? What's Live Mesh?
Well, Live Mesh is a combination of a platform and a set of experiences that are designed to sort of bring the web to the PC and to the devices that people use, and to connect them together seamlessly so that users sort of, instead of thinking about individual devices and having to worry about where their information is, users just think in terms of their mesh of devices and their mesh of applications and the mesh of relationships that they have with other users. The platform takes care of connecting them all together.
Interesting. So what I really want to focus on today is the nuts and bolts of that eloquent way that you just described it. How does it work? How do you ensure that there's this, you know...
The mesh.
The mesh.
Where does the mesh come from? All right.
Yeah.
So it's helpful to start, sort of use as a starting point the things that you take for granted. Say on the live services platform, typically most users know what a live ID is. You know, they use Hotmail, they use Live Messenger. They know, you know, you know, you go and you sign in. You have an identity, you know, on the mesh,
okay.
Or at least what we have today, the live services platform. What we've done is that we've actually extended that platform, and we've added the notion of your devices, so that the same way you sign in, you know, and we can identify you, and we sort of know. We have a profile for you.
Mm-hmm.
Your devices can sign in.
Hmm.
Right. So we took what we had, you know, which is just identity, and we made it into a directory. You can think of it as a live mesh directory. So now this gives you a way to not only have yourself be online, but bring the devices that you use use on an ongoing basis online as well, and think about them as a mesh of devices.
Interesting.
That's sort of the first step of what we've built.
So, and also in that, it's a mesh of identities.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Because of my friends or what used to be called contacts.
Absolutely.
Are now just part of my mesh clan.
Mm-hmm. So a mesh of relationships between users and between users and devices.
Outstanding. So it would make sense if for my cell phone
mm-hmm.
that the contacts that I have that are related to that are the ones that I say call.
Sure.
Yeah. So, or SMS at least.
Yeah.
Because I have a bunch of contacts that I don't call and I don't SMS them. So they don't have that kind of relationship. Is it that granular? Guess what I'm asking.
Well, we're launching right now. We aren't actually launching the mobile integration yet, but stay tuned.
Cool.
We will be supporting as devices inside your mesh,
mm-hmm.
both Mac as well as mobile devices.
Okay.
So we're definitely thinking in terms of making the platform broad.
Excellent.
And have it encompass, you know, all the devices that you'd expect it to encompass, you know, that you need to have be part of your mesh.
Excellent. I mean, and so I remember about 5 years ago, the dream of web services was
mm-hmm.
that the client is just a afterthought in the sense that it doesn't matter. The processing happens in the web service, things get done, communication happens, and then whatever client happened to call, it gets something that client
mm-hmm.
understands. So this is sort of similar in the sense that the only thing that the client really needs to be able to do is authenticate against the service. True or false?
Well, it's not entirely what we set out to do. What we actually set out to do is to give you the best of both worlds, meaning we give you the full experience, you know, the rich desktop client,
mm-hmm.
But then we also connect it to the web seamlessly. So now what I mean by that is that I just talked about, you know, the directory, which is definitely a directory in the cloud,
mm-hmm.
but we actually also enabled via sync an offline experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for folks who are familiar with the FeedSync protocol,
mm-hmm.
Which was published, you know, a little while ago by Microsoft, sort of under an open license. What FeedSync does is that it defines a minimal set of information that has to be enabled, that has to be maintained at various endpoints in order for those endpoints to support bidirectional synchronization of arbitrary information.
Okay.
So what we've done is that we've enabled the directory in the cloud, and then we've sort of enlightened it by implementing FeedSync so that the information we have about your mesh in the cloud can be seamlessly synced down to your client, so that even when you're offline, say you're on a plane, you're on a business trip, you don't have an internet connection, the experience that you have interacting with your mesh is more or less the same.
Interesting. And this is a different experience than simply typing an email offline in Outlook while you're flying to Paris, or if you're lucky enough to be going to Paris anyway.
It's analogous.
Yeah, it's analogous.
But it's deeper, because it's not really just about your data now. It's also about the relationships you have, you know, with your devices and with other people.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, from a development point of view, mm-hmm. right? Channel 9 is, we target developers, architects, technical people. How did you pull it off? How does it work? What's in the cloud? What's the cloud engine?
All right, so the cloud engine is fundamentally, it's two things. The first is the directory that I just mentioned. Now, the challenges there are building a directory of all of you, of all the users, you know, who have live IDs potentially,
Whew.
And all of their devices. So we're talking about hundreds of millions,
yes.
you know, of entries in this directory. So that's a huge scale-out persistent storage problem.
Mm.
So that's one side. That's just the directory. That you can think of as the glue that holds your mesh together. So you need to be able to walk up to, you know, an arbitrary machine, an arbitrary browser, mm-hmm. you know, click a button and be able to, and we should be able to render you a view of your mesh, the devices that you use, whoever you are.
Mm-hmm.
So that means scaling up our service. That means replicated storage. It means reliable storage via replication in the back end, a whole host of things, as well as, you know, building the UX on top of this so that it's responsive.
Mm.
Well, that's actually only part of the problem.
Mm.
The other thing that we enable inside the mesh is that now that you have a directory of your devices,
mm-hmm.
we actually allow you to establish peer connectivity between them. So one of the facilities that the cloud provides
mm-hmm.
is essentially authenticated bootstrapping for peer connectivity between devices in your mesh.
Nice.
We have an experience that's built on top of this called the Live Mesh Remote Desktop. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you can walk up to, you know, one of your devices. It'll give you a view of all of the devices in your mesh. Click a button, and next thing you know, you're remoting to that device by signing in using your Live ID.
Cool.
The same peer connectivity fabric is also used for actually replicating your files across your devices, which leads me into the second big cloud service that we built.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I talk about your mesh of information being available everywhere, actually what I'm really talking about is this, if you can think about a scale-out replication and synchronization engine that records, you know, all of the state that you've pulled into your mesh, you know, live folders, you know, picture libraries, actually arbitrary pieces of information, because the service is designed to support anything that can be represented as a feed,
mm.
we can synchronize.
Mm.
So now the scale-out service, we refer to as a live mesh storage service or synchronized storage service,
mm.
Essentially is the focal point for keeping your information in sync and available, not just in the cloud, but also on the clients and all of your devices.
Okay.
Now, between any two devices, once you've added a piece of information to your mesh, say it's a folder, you know, you have a folder for work documents, a folder for pictures, etc.,
mm-hmm.
It's available in the cloud, you know, up to whatever quota space you have available, but then the cloud also makes sure that all of the devices that you want to have copies of that state get copies, and that they're maintained in sync using a peer-to-peer transfer.
Interesting. So let's, you know, you're an architect.
Sure.
So let's get on the whiteboard.
Right.
And let's start sketches. I mean, I think one of the simplest things we could do,
mm-hmm.
but let's just look at a simple example of, you know,
okay.
you want to synchronize a couple devices, you know, your PC, you know, say your laptop, yourself,
okay.
or I guess you can't talk about mobile yet because we
okay.
don't know about it.
Yeah.
But let's pretend like so basically I'm just thinking of just a simple user scenario, but
right.
then we really dig into the back-end architecture about what's going on, because it's basically the user experience is a thin shell
mm-hmm.
on a rather robust
large engine.
A deep platform.
Yeah.
All right, so it's, so now as it turns out, synchronizing your information is the scenario that probably touches most of the cloud. So what I'll do is I'll start out with the scenario of just doing setting up a live mesh remote desktop session.
Perfect.
Because that's simple. That's simple.
And you can great. Transition. And I love the whiteboards that you guys have in this building.
Almost floor to ceiling.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right, so so we have a live mesh directory service. That's the first major service that comprises the live mesh cloud. The way to think about what we've done is that all of the information that's part of your mesh is represented as resources in the live mesh directory. The model is that we have a set of principles. Users are principles, devices are principles, and you can establish relationships between these principles. So I have a set. So when I sign in, what I'm really doing is I'm looking up an identity record inside the live mesh directory.
Okay.
When you install the client software on a device, and you what we refer to as claiming the device, you essentially bring the device into your mesh. Two things are happening. First of all, you're creating a device resource inside the mesh, and then you're setting up a relationship between you and that device. Now, once you've set up that relationship, wherever you sign in, we can find it for you. So if you walk up later, you know, to the Live Mesh web desktop, which is the experience that we have for you that's based inside of the browser, we can give you a view of all of the devices that you've claimed and added to your mesh.
Okay.
So you can think of this as a one-to-many relationship. Now, suppose that I walk up to a web desktop and I want to bootstrap connectivity to one of these devices. Effectively, what I want to do is, assuming the device is online, so here's a user, and say I have a browser and a target device. I've added, I'm launching the browser from another device. When each of these devices that are part of my mesh come online, they come to the Live Mesh directory service, specifically to the device connectivity subservice inside Live Mesh directory. And they publish the fact that they're online. So now when I sign up to, when I walk up to the browser, I can see a list of my devices and I can see which ones are online. And any device that's online, I can set up a remote desktop session to. So when I click to set up a remote desktop session, what happens is that the source device effectively sends a signal that flows through the device connectivity service to open a session. The device connectivity service forwards that signal after authorizing it, and the application, the Live Mesh remote desktop application that's sitting on top of the Live Mesh client runtime, mm-hmm. Receives that invitation, and then they actually bootstrap direct connectivity using information that they exchange via this channel. And from that point onward, I have a encrypted channel set up between those two devices. And on top and through that encrypted channel, the remote desktop engine that's part of Windows actually sends the same messages that are used for the remote desktop feature, the terminal services remote desktop feature that users are familiar with.
Excellent. So that's what enables you to seem like you're actually working on your laptop.
Absolutely.
Or on your work machine, or at some point your cell mm-hmm. phone or some other device.
Absolutely.
It's the device to connect to the internet. You can use this. It can be part of your mesh.
Yeah. So that's the basic scenario. So how do we actually pull this off?
Yes.
Remember, there are two things that I kind of glossed over here. There are actually two kinds of state that we are maintaining here, and we're maintaining them in a scale-out manner, potentially, you know, across data centers, you know, across banks of hundreds of machines. The first kind of piece of state is persistent state. This is information, you know, that, you know, we've persisted in the cloud, you know, about identities, about devices, and that is scaled out using essentially the Windows Live Storage engine that also supports a number of other experiences. Mm. The second kind of state that we have is transient state. So when a device comes online, that information might change. It might only be valid, you know, for a few minutes. It might come online, go offline, come online again. So that kind of state we refer to as transient state. So storing that kind of transient state is interesting because we don't want to write it to disk because it changes so frequently. So what we actually build instead is we build a scaled out in-memory store that uses some algorithms that we collaborated with Microsoft Research on developing. Mm-hmm. It's backed by a service that is responsible for figuring out on an ongoing basis at this instant which machine is responsible for this particular piece of information. Mm-hmm. In this case, a device connectivity record, the fact that a device is online.
So is this related to Dryad?
Well, it's not directly. It's the technique that it uses is similar. Is related to this to the techniques that are used in Dryad. Mm. It's actually somewhat flexible in that we've built it on top of a particular scale-out algorithm right now. Mm-hmm. But we've designed it so that we can revise the algorithm and we can potentially have different clouds using different algorithms for scaling out this information.
Cool. Very interesting. And that's a very interesting problem that I know everyone's working on, right? So scalability is going to be really interesting. Scalability is pretty darn good today for Windows Live. And also Windows Live Identity. It used to be called Passport, because you said hundreds of millions of users. So it's going to be interesting to see how this scales out and performs.
It was an interesting design point because if you think about Windows Live Messenger, for instance, this is a service that has hundreds of millions of active users. You know, tens of millions of users might be online at any given time. Mm-hmm. So when we're setting out to build this, we knew that this particular combination of persistent, you know, and transient state, and then the complexity of the interactions between these kinds of state, you know, that are involved in these experiences is going to be a challenge. And so what we ended up doing is factoring things out at a fairly low level in order to make sure that the system overall is scaled.
Okay.
So that covers a single scenario, which is just bootstrapping direct connectivity between two devices in the service of a particular application, which is the live mesh remote desktop application. More or less the same flow, you could imagine building other experiences on top of it. And so we've been careful to factor out the platform from the experience to make sure that we could actually layer experiences on top of the platform as time goes on.
Fantastic. And I mean, I think that's a really, really good point. Ray Ozzie mentioned that in his most recent interview with John Udell. You guys really have made a true platform.
That's right.
Because of that, you can enable ideas for experience that you haven't conceived of.
Absolutely.
That's the idea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, then the interesting thing is, you know, as the internal pilot has been unfolding, like, on a daily basis, you know, we get all of these, wow, you could build this, you know, wow, you could build that.
Yeah.
You know, pieces of feedback, you know, from our internal dog food users. And it's great to see that, you know, like people kind of like the potential that's there. It's exciting.
Cool.
So that was the first flow, just the live mesh remote desktop. So now we can transition, if you'd like, to talk a little bit about, you know, synchronized storage.
Absolutely. Okay.
So let's see. Now, the second major application that we're releasing right now on top of the Live Mesh platform is Live Mesh folders. A Live Mesh folder is just a collection of files, potentially on one of my devices, that I've chosen to bring into my mesh. So once I've chosen to bring this folder into my mesh, you know, I can keep it in sync across my devices. I can invite other people to share, you know, that folder, you know, and to map it to their devices. The platform takes care of keeping the information in sync. Nice. So there's a couple of things that are worth drilling into to understand how that works.
Great.
Now, the first thing is that the directory that we use for device connectivity and for identity is the same directory that also supports synchronized storage. In addition, we have a service that we refer to as live mesh synchronization storage, or synchronized storage service. And what this does is you can think of it as a scale-out collection of pieces of state that users, you know, who are live mesh users have chosen to synchronize. So now here again, you'll see the split between the platform and the experience. The experience is live mesh folders, which is, you know, I have a folder on my desktop, you know, or in my documents, you know, and I want it available everywhere. The platform actually enables you to synchronize anything. The way that we enable that is that we adopt feeds and entries, Atom and RSS feeds and entries, as a ubiquitous way of describing information that you want to have in your mesh. So what does that mean precisely? So an Atom feed is essentially a collection of entries. And Atom and RSS both define semantics for updating, you know, a feed, adding entries to a feed, removing entries from a feed. So it gives you, you know, collection semantics, the basic primitives that you need. On top of, I mean, and these semantics operate typically on top of HTTP, but you could also, you know, run, you know, the protocols over potentially other transports. Now, what FeedSync does, the FeedSync protocol that I mentioned earlier, it allows you to very simple way, enlighten an arbitrary Atom or RSS feed with a piece of information that allows you to track version history and changes, and that also allows you to do conflict resolution. These two facilities together are basically what you need for bidirectional synchronization. What that means is that whereas, you know, Atom and RSS, you know, natively might be designed, might enable me to have a publisher-consumer relationship, where someone publishes a feed, you know, and then I consume it, I sync it down to my devices. FeedSync allows us to go both ways, meaning I can pull information down and I can publish information back up bidirectionally between two, you know, between two feeds.
Excellent.
So what the storage service is it's a huge collection of feeds. Each containing collections of entries. Each having a sync element as defined in the feed sync specification. So now what we do when we actually, when we enliven the folder on your desktop and bring it into your mesh is that we take that folder and we generate a feed representation of the folder.
Okay.
Once we've generated the feed representation of the folder, we add the sync element and we record in our database the version and maintain in our database a version vector associated with that that we keep up to date as changes happen on the file system. Right. So that gives you essentially an alternate view of the documents that you might have in a folder in your file system.
So then from the system perspective, it's a service running on the client, system service.
That's right.
That's watching a various number of file folders.
That's right.
Or even files. I might say, just synchronize this one file.
Not only is it a service, but it's interesting because what we chose to do is that in the cloud we have a directory service and a storage service, and then we have an experience built on top of that. Mm-hmm. The client runtime is a mirror image of what we have in the cloud.
Nice.
So the client contains a runtime that has a directory. and that has storage. It has a storage service, and then it has an application sitting on top of it called the Live Mesh Folders application. Mm-hmm. That Live Mesh Folders application is what's responsible for watching the file system and generating this view, which is the normalized view common to all mesh objects that goes into the client runtime's instance of the storage service.
Interesting.
Then the client runtime is responsible for taking that and pushing it out to the cloud so that it's available across your mesh and across all of your devices. And that's how bidirectional sync is enabled. So now, what this means is that not only can we synchronize your folders, we can synchronize contacts, we can synchronize favorites, you can pull in, a blog, and have that be part of your mesh. If you can represent it using feeds and entries, we can synchronize it.
Interesting. So let me ask you, because I think the question needs to be asked, why did you make the decision to standardize on this sort of RSS Atom model as mm-hmm. your core synchronization constructs? I mean, there are other things that could be done. In the end, yeah. It's XML.
That's right.
I mean, I get that.
Well, the reason was we wanted the platform to be as broadly applicable as possible. So not only did we standardize an Atom and RSS, but we actually went to great lengths to make the way that these features fit into Atom and RSS be as natural as possible. So it feels, like it's a natural way to apply the protocol. Mm-hmm. So we're not only just adopting the syntax, but also the way that the Atom publishing protocol works. Mm-hmm. You can essentially take an implementation of an Atom pub client. You can point it at the client runtime, and you can get a view of the information that's being synchronized across your mesh, whether that view corresponds to a folder or whether it corresponds, to a set of contacts, whether it corresponds to a discussion. You can take that same client, and that same AtomPub client, and point it at our cloud, and you'll get the same view as you get on the client. So having that kind of broad reach and having it just be really dead simple to approach it and being able to build an application that uses these common protocols and have it run both on the client and on the cloud, we felt like it seemed the most compelling way to go.
It's incredibly interesting because in a sense, this is really different architecturally because the cloud is the client.
That's right.
And the client is the cloud. That's really cool because that sort of changes the way that we usually think about client, cloud, mm-hmm. client, server, interaction. They're the
Absolutely.
Same.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's a lot more horsepower maybe mm-hmm. happening in the cloud. Of course there will, because you'll have thousands of mm-hmm. concurrent nodes, parallel
yeah,
nodes,
absolutely.
And massive processing.
Yeah.
So that's really, really interesting that you chose that design.
That's the key. The key is to use the cloud for the things that the cloud is good at. Mm. The cloud is good at maintaining vast amounts of information, and giving you a natural way to navigate the relationships between that information. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's a set of, whereas the client is good for having an experience that's kind of scoped and that takes advantage of computing resources that are dedicated to me.
Absolutely.
To one user. Right. What we've done is we've just tried to find the cleanest, most approachable way to achieve a coupling between them that's both deep in that the semantics, and the concepts are uniform. But that's also loose in that I can unplug from the cloud and, my client experience, remains robust.
Outstanding. Now, let's talk a little bit about that real quickly.
Okay.
Because let's say I'm somebody who has thousands of contacts,
mm-hmm.
10 devices, right? It's not unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to have, I'm going on a trip,
yeah.
and I want to take my laptop with me,
yeah.
and I want to bring my mesh with me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I interact with my mesh, I want it to seem like I'm really interacting with my mesh. You're saying that is actually the case, as opposed
Absolutely.
To just I'm making some changes offline, and as soon as I'm back online, it all gets synced up for me. But more than that, the experience is synced. Okay.
Now, there are facilities that won't be available if you're offline, obviously. Like, you can't connect to your devices,
Wait
to your
a minute.
Other devices.
You need the internet to get connected to your friends?
No, well, to your other devices, you
sure.
do.
You haven't raised and hasn't figured that one out. You guys are working
not
on
quite,
that, though.
Not quite, yeah.
Okay. So, okay.
So, wherever possible, where it makes sense for things to work offline,
mm-hmm.
We're enabling it.
Excellent.
So that's part of what's going on in the cloud. What else is happening?
Well, so what I actually talked about so far is the representation of information. So those are the concepts. Now, if you actually look at the storage service itself, you know, that's kind of interesting. So at the conceptual level, you have this concept, this, you know, this, you scale out, you know, feed collections, entries, you know, and synchronization. Now, in reality, it's actually quite a bit more challenging than that. So try to imagine how you would approach, you know, building a service that is capable of accommodating, you know, the version vectors for every feed in the world, potentially.
Sure.
Right? Because you want whatever a user wants, you know, to add to their mesh, you want to be able to support it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is that we have two kinds of storage in the synchronized storage service. So we have metadata. So this includes information, you know, about the feeds and about the entries. It also includes information that supports the sharing, that supports the sharing capability. So if I add you as a member, you know, of a particular mesh object so that you can synchronize the feeds as well and map them to your devices, that information is stored in the metadata store.
Okay.
Now, in addition, we also have information about blobs. So when I pull you know, a feed into the storage service, you know, I want the contents that's associated with those with entries in those feeds to be available. In the case of a file system folder, those contents would be the actual files, right? And then the third kind of information is actually transient information as well. So analogously to how the accounts to the how the Live Mesh Directory service maintains transient state to support device connectivity, the synchronized storage service support maintains transient state. You know, to help you, you know, with things like you know, you navigate into a folder. It's useful for me to be able to see, you know, which other users are interacting with this particular, you know, Live Mesh folder that I'm interacting with. And that information is maintained in the context of an activity subservice inside the synchronized storage service.
Hmm. Now, when you say blob, just to get a little geeky here, when I think about blob and I think about data, I think about binary blobs in SQL.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for example, on Channel 9,
yeah,
that's how we represent a niner.
Yeah.
A niner is a binary blob.
That's right.
And it's just grab this, you know, grab the junk out of the database and then rehydrate it. So when you say blob, what's the format of the data that we're talking about here?
Well, it's essentially, think of a huge table of identifiers, you know, their hashes, the hash algorithm that was used, and then the actual bytes.
Okay.
When we talk about a blob, that's really what we mean.
Okay.
So it's a piece of information that's, in some sense, you know, self-identifying. Now, there's state that you can generate from that. For instance, what's a content type? Mm-hmm. You know, if it's an image, you know, like what thumbnails do you have persisted, you know, of various sizes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's some ancillary metadata associated with the blob. But basically, think of it as, you know, when you click a link in the browser, you know, you get, you know, the open, save, cancel dialog. Basically, the thing that you just clicked on, that's the blob.
Outstanding. Okay, cool.
All right.
Just want to dig a little into that.
Okay. So now that's the synchronized storage service. And then the third thing that we should talk about is what we refer to as a news service.
News service.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So now think of what we've described so far. You have a mesh of your devices, you know, relationships with other users, the data that you've brought into your mesh, right? So we've organized it for you, and we've made it possible for you to synchronize it. But like, how do you navigate? You know, what's changing? How do you, you know, discover? You know, like that so and so added, you know, a new picture. Well, do you rely on email for that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, that works, and that's what most people. Well, that's what we kind of have today. But we thought we could do better, and we could make it more approachable. And having organized this information, build on top of that. So what the new service does is you can think of it as essentially an agent that runs inside your mesh on your behalf and that minds, you know, the changes that are happening in your mesh on an ongoing basis, you know, and basically brings you, you know, news about happenings across your mesh. You know, this device, you know, is low on disk space, for instance.
Excellent.
Or, you know, Joe just added, you know, 20 new pictures, you know, to, you know, the vacations folder.
So essentially what it is, then, one way to think about it would be it's the profile data in friend in Facebook. So if I add you as my friend, mm-hmm. it says, you know, you've just added somebody else as your friend. You've just updated your status. So is it that? I mean, that's very simplistic. My
sure.
point is, it's like watching all of my devices.
Again, it's a platform and it's an experience.
Okay.
The sense in which it's a platform is that really the way to think about it is that it's an agent that is organizing your mesh and mining it on your behalf.
Okay.
Now, on top of that, you can build a variety of experiences. You could build an experience, you know, that is focused on your relationships between human beings.
Mm.
You could build an experience that's focused on keeping your devices healthy.
Sure.
You could build an experience that's focused on making it really easy for you to navigate a specific type of content, say pictures, across your entire mesh, and so on and so forth.
Excellent. Now, one of the things that just came to mind that could be interesting would be to utilize this with robotics, right? So, in the sense that I could add my robot, I could say I have a robot in my living room. I want to add my robot to my mesh. When my robot's connected to the network, I want to be able to know what my robot's doing.
I think you're actually the first person I've heard, you know, bring up the possibility of robotic mesh devices. So that's actually cool.
Could be interesting. Absolutely.
And
you guys have a, you know, you're working on the developer API. We're not going to go down that path because you guys are just in technical preview.
Right.
Typically what happens, it was the same case with Photosynth.
Mm-hmm.
You come out with a killer technology, and then you have to step back and work on an API.
That makes sense.
We won't go there, but it is probably going to be managed and therefore interoperable with something like Microsoft Robotics Studio.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's, you know, just hypothetical geeking out. Very cool. So that's one of the things that you've been striking me as you've been talking here is that this needs to be, you guys spin up a fair amount of threads.
Yeah. Threads meaning execution
threads like threads? An execution thread, right? On the client. I mean, you have a lot of things going on because you're having. So let me ask you this, really what I'm asking. So if I have a bunch of mesh objects that I want to keep synchronized with whatever client experience I happen to have, you have individual threads working on synchronization per...
Not quite. So what we've done is that think of the client runtime. It's a microcosm of the cloud. So what it actually does is that it has queues, you know, of folders or mesh objects, you know, that have changed that need to be revisited in order to rehydrate the feed entry view of the backend content.
Okay.
It has queues of files, you know, blobs that need to be transferred, you know, from other peers. It has queues of incoming requests from other peers, you know, to fetch, you know, blobs from this particular device. You know, it has queues, you know, of changes that have happened in the cloud that aren't yet reflected, you know, in the client's cached store so that they're available offline. So think of it in terms of a runtime, which is essentially on an ongoing basis, it's visiting, you know, these queues of work that it has, you know, pending for it.
Absolutely. So it's like a giant thread pool.
Sort of, yeah, basically.
But hopefully a better one than is in the CLR. Just kidding, my friends. They're going to work on that. They're going to upgrade
that.
But that's very cool. All right. So we've covered what? Let's give me a little conclusion here because we've covered a lot of stuff.
All right, so let's see. So we started sort of at the conceptual level. I mean, what we think of as being your mesh and what that leads to architecturally, you know, the split between, you know, the directory service and the synchronized storage service, kind of the parallels of having a combination, you know, of persistent state, you know, and transient state, there's a pervasive theme, which is a separation, you know, between platform and experience. Mm-hmm. The other pervasive scheme is I guess, the demand for massively scalable primitives as part of the platform in order to support the experiences we have. Mm-hmm. And there's some things that we didn't quite talk about. For instance, our support for subscriptions and notifications across your mesh, mm-hmm. Which are basically designed to improve responsiveness. We didn't talk about the programming model being RESTful. So it's a pretty broad and comprehensive platform.
Of course.
I mean, we're looking forward to, I guess, listening, you know, and mm-hmm. learning, you know, where folks want to take it.
That's the technology preview.
That's right.
That's released.
Preview. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not. We definitely we can go down that path. When you say RESTful, why choose a RESTful?
Well, a big part of the reason was to support our scalability goals. Our target is to be able to build our cloud out of commodity hardware, and we wanted it to scale out, you know, massively, which meant that we could only support minimal interactions between, you know, nodes in our clouds as part of, you know, common task, you know, synchronizing a folder, bootstrapping connectivity. That meant the pieces of state that we store in our cloud have to be self-contained.
Okay.
You know, so if I'm interacting with a particular live folder, I come into the cloud, I hit one machine, I come out of the cloud. Not, I come into the cloud, I hit one machine, which hits another machine, which hits another machine, you know, and you have like NOA communication patterns. So that actually drove the programming model as well as the internal architectural model. Mm-hmm. And you can see that in some of the, as when we start to talk more, you know, about how a developer would approach a platform, mm-hmm. you'll start to see how those interactions actually result in, you know, some cool capabilities.
Now, we talked about, you know, moving off into a little bit of a more mm-hmm. philosophical area.
Sure.
We like to do this on Channel 9 if
yeah.
you look at some of the threads we have. But when you think about the cloud mirrors the client,
mm-hmm.
you know, and vice versa, obviously, or let's look at the client mirrors the cloud.
Yeah.
The API should also mirror the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you guys designed and implemented the platform, I mean, it's not always the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Windows, when you think about Win32 API, it doesn't
yeah.
look exactly like how Windows works.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the best example. No offense to you, Raymond Chen. All right, so let's talk a little bit about that. So
okay.
in your internal architecture
mm-hmm.
is really what I'm asking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that should bubble up to
yeah.
the public API
yeah,
service.
Absolutely. So let's think about the data model. I started to hint at the data model when I drew these boxes, identity, device claim, and then feed down here and entry.
Mm-hmm.
So they're set. You can, the way to think about the data model is that we have a set of routes, which are root resources. You start at a root resource, and then there's a mesh that's rooted at that point that you can navigate. That's the essence, you know, of when I say the system is RESTful, I mean that essentially that it's defined in terms of a set of resources, a set of fairly specific operations, you know, create, read, update, delete.
Mm-hmm.
All of the computation that happens in our cloud is in terms of those operations. So you have an identity, you know, you create an identity, you mm-hmm. update an identity, you add a device to your mesh by creating a device claim that refers to the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the operations that happen both in the client and in the cloud at a platform level are simply, you know, the respective runtimes executing this small number of operations on this set of resources.
Excellent. So what are some of the challenges that you ran into?
So now there's actually quite a lot of debate about how far you can take a RESTful system. So there
are you a Restafarian?
Well, not. I wouldn't say necessarily.
Okay.
I'll say that it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Taking this model as far as we possibly could. Think about some of the facilities that we enabled. So we support subscriptions, meaning that almost any of these resources.
Can you move more a little to the light? Because you
almost any of these resources, an identity, a device claim, a mesh object, I can subscribe to the cloud and say, tell me when this changes.
Hmm.
Right. We have support for notification queues that, you know, our client runtime can create, or that, you know, even a web browser can create, saying, you know, I'm interested in changes from the following area parts, you know, of this user's mesh or this device's mesh. Right. So building capability for security primitives, subscriptions, notifications, peer connectivity, you know, sessions, message exchange, all on top of a very small set of RESTful primitives. Was fun.
Was fun.
Oh yeah.
Excellent. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Now, of course, you know, you might have ran into limitations that if you had gone a different way, might have been more complicated, but you would have had perhaps greener pastures. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but you could, clearly you got really far using REST.
That's right.
Impressive.
Yeah, so now, I mean, in some ways, the issue was that, or rather the idea was that we wanted to take these simple, approachable protocols. So we wanted you to be able to take an AtomPub client and do almost everything across the mesh using just that client. Now, what does that client understand? It understands, you know, the Atom, you know, syntax, you know, feeds and entries. And then it understands the publishing protocol, you know, create, you know, post, you know, get, put, delete, and some basic optimistic concurrency semantics, you know, for figuring out when you have conflicting updates to a resource. So using just those primitives, HTTP with AtomPub, you know, slash RSS layered on top of it, we wanted to enable you to do fairly interesting and sophisticated things, you know, all the way up to the user experience level on top of the mesh platform.
Excellent. Very cool. And I see some of that user experience could be Silverlight running in a web browser.
Absolutely.
And in fact, it's a C++ app, MFC.
Absolutely.
And you said, in fact, it is.
In fact, it is. Well, we won't. I won't talk again about the developer platform very much. But,
sure.
But because the because we natively, you know, understand, you know, feeds and entries. If you have an environment that understands feeds and entries, then you can conclude certain things about you know, what you'll be able to do.
Absolutely, very good stuff. Well, I mean, is there? I mean, clearly, there's more to this, but. What specifically did you work on? Like, what was your...
Well, actually, I was architect for cloud services, so at a high level, more or less...
All of this.
Yeah. Now, I mean, so, I mean, there's a ton of, you know, there's a ton of planning. And actually, in this room is where we had a lot of our design meetings. We'd sort of, you know, lock ourselves in the room and go at it on this very whiteboard, working out, you know, details of everything from... our partitioning strategy, you know, for account services, for directory services, state, you know, identities, devices, storage service, how we'd implement, you know, the device connectivity service, you know, how we'd support transient state, you know, scale out, you know, management and monitoring.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And how, I mean, not only transient state, but what happens when a node goes down, right? What happens when, you know, a device disappears and then comes back? You know, so... And the other thing I find interesting is identity.
This,
you guys haven't solved the identity problem because you're using Windows Live.
That's right.
Which used to be Passport, which is a solid, definitely a solid identity system. But, of course, there's other ideas of identity as well, right? So there's work that's going on. It used to be called some InfoCard.
That's right.
But I could implement an InfoCard solution on top of your
solution. That's absolutely, which is what I would have said.
Very cool. Which is actually would work nicely on the client or the web browser.
That's right.
But, that's very cool. Anyway, so did you guys have a lot of fun? So I would imagine you didn't spend too much time arguing over identity because you have a nice solution already that's Passport-based with Windows Live ID. But the device connectivity and synchronized storage must be quite interesting.
We had a lot of discussions about the communications infrastructure, how to factor things. I mean, we spent a lot of time on trying to get the factoring such that we could scale it out and we could operate it efficiently, but then it was also approachable, you know, for a developer. And that we could build our experiences on top of it, you know, without, you know, having to contort things, you know, inside the code.
Cool. Now, when you say developers, I mean, from a granular perspective, because you adopted this RESTful model and this sort of Web 2.0 sort of model with Atom and RSS as your core transport data constructs, anyway, you're appealing to a web developer as well. You don't have to be, you know, System 32 type rocket scientist. Well, lower than System 32, but you know what I mean.
Well, remember, so our mission was bring Windows to the web and the web to Windows. So, I mean, that was absolutely a high order bit for us. I mean, to take a broad range of scenarios in Windows and represent them, you know, for the web in a way that feels natural.
Absolutely. Now, how big can my mesh be? Because you're going to run into people that are going to have massive meshes.
We designed it so that your mesh scales, hopefully independent, you know, of, you know, like, so essentially you shouldn't, there's no built-in limit. There's no architectural limit, I should say. Now, we might have, you know, like throttling limits and so forth, but architecturally, because of the way the partitioning, you know, system is designed, where each of your mesh objects has an identifier, which we partition independently, you should be able to just, you know, keep creating them. And that's actually, the fact that we designed it that way is important. It was an explicit design goal to not impose limitations on how big your mesh can get.
Excellent. Very cool. All right. Well, hey, it's great to meet you.
Absolutely.
And thank you for your time. This was fun. See ya.
See ya.